folks, we've been on a temporary hiatus, but I'd like to welcome you back to How Do I Get Your Job? This is a podcast where I like to pester professionals about cool careers and get an inside look at different academic departments within the University of Washington here in Seattle. Today, I'm going to be sitting down with Dr. Alex Anderson. He's the director of the MS program in Architectural History and Theory at UW's College of Built Environment. Today, we're going to be talking about the best buildings on campus, the nature of Seattle's construction and its many cranes, and how students who are either new or have been at the university a while can sort of get into the architecture department and see where art and engineering come together to make a really cool field. As always, like I said, my name is Luke Schaefer, and I sincerely hope you enjoy. Welcome. I'm talking with Dr. Alex Anderson, director of the MS program in Architectural History and Theory, the Department of Architecture here at the University of Washington. Alex, how you doing?
I'm doing great. It's nice to see you, Luke.
Nice to see you too. It's a wonderful day we're having right now. I just want to talk about, before we dive into your education, your background in the department, I've got a quick question, sort of an icebreaker. Say you've got a hypothetical student who is brand new at the university, decides I am going to major in architecture in that sort of field. How long before they can build a building?
That's a great question. So for an undergraduate student, typically the route is you start the architecture program as a junior, and so it's 2 years in the program, and so it's a regular four-year degree. But in order to get a license to practice architecture, you need a master's degree. So for those students who have already done an undergraduate degree, that master's degree is 2 years. But if you're somebody like me, I studied civil engineering, I did a master's degree in 3 years. So once you get the master's degree, you can work in an office. Obviously, you can do that while you're at work. But then you have to accrue experience as an apprentice in an office. And that can take, depending on when you get it started, some people start during their education, some people start once they graduate. That usually takes about 2 years total. So from the time, you know, you decide to, if you're a sophomore and you decide to be an architect, you can't really have a license in less than 6 years, I would say, from that point. And for many people, it takes a little bit longer than that to get the license to practice, but that allows you to be in charge of a project. Many times, people will graduate and work in a firm for a long time without actually being licensed, because you can work as part of a design team right from the beginning.
That's interesting. I have never actually spoken to an architect about what kind of work goes into it. What does that look like as a master's student coming out of college?
The work that you would do in a firm, you mean?
Yeah, sure.
It varies quite a bit depending on the size of the firm. So, for example, if you join a really small firm that does typically houses, from the very beginning, you might actually meet with clients, do primary design work. You know, especially if a firm is busy, they might get a house addition or a remodel. And, you know, coming out of school, you might be the one in charge of that right away, which means that you're talking to the clients, you're doing the design work, you're working with the contractor to make sure everything gets done right. And then, you know, following through on the whole project. That's a small firm. But if you join a big firm, what probably will happen is you're part of a design team, which might be quite a few people, depending on the size of the building. And that design team, when I worked in a big office right after school, my first job was to go and do what are called as-built drawings. And what you do is very often big projects are additions to existing buildings. So in order to do that, you actually need to know exactly what the building is. You need to measure it. So the apprentices almost always are told to go out and measure the building, come back, do drawings of those, and those will be the base drawings. And then, you know, then as a starting out person, you might be doing pretty small tasks. Like I did parking lot designs, I did bathroom elevations, as they're called, where you're just doing drawings of all the fixtures in a bathroom. So you get kind of tasked with small things, and you learn along the way. And as you get more used to this process and working on a team, you get more and more responsibility to the point where, you know, you may be the project architect, which means you're in charge of the whole team doing the project, which is a pretty big responsibility for a big building.
That's really cool. I want to talk about, well, before we dive into your education, just about like, what do you love about being an architect? Because you talk about drawings, and now whenever I talk to guests on the show, sometimes I talk to people who code, who work in accounting, and it seems like even in their off time, they're sort of practicing that. As like an architect, do you find students or yourself like making mock-ups of buildings or drawings just for fun? Is that like, how do you practice that?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a great question. First of all, the work that I tend to do, because I'm a professor, is a little bit different than a professional practitioner would do. Most of what I do is teaching, but architecture is an interesting field because it involves a lot of different aspects of culture and of communication and of working in teams. You know, a lot of times you think of an architect as sitting at a desk and drawing and building and designing those mock-ups. But the reality is there's a lot of communication with the clients and with contractors and engineers. So, you know, the regular job is a pretty broad thing. But I think what most architects love the most about that job is the design part. And so, yeah, I mean, it's important to be good at drawing or communicating through graphics, which might be hand-built models, it might be digital models, it might be sketches, it might be more formal hand-drawn drawings. There are lots of different ways of communicating visually in architecture. And in school, especially, we try to develop those skills in people so that when you go into an office, you know, you're competent verbally and in writing for sure, but the skill that you never really get except in an architecture program is all that drawing and digital modeling and hand-built modeling you do. And it's a lot of fun. I mean, you're working with your hands, you've got an idea, you're putting it down on paper or on a computer screen. All of that's pretty satisfying. And yeah, I think a lot of people do, a lot of students actually do competitions, or people who are just graduating, they get together with their friends and do a competition and try to win a project. And that can often launch a small team of architects into a whole career. You know, they'll win a project, build the project, and that will be the beginning of the firm. That happens actually pretty often.
That's interesting. So how did that path look like for you? You said you majored in civil engineering. Where'd you do that, and what happened after?
So I studied civil engineering at Cornell, and about 2 years into the program, I realized that although I liked the courses, they were not exactly what I was looking for. So I started to take a lot of art courses, and I had one professor in particular who, you know, watched me draw and said, "Well, you're not a great artist, but you're certainly a good draftsman. I mean, you should be thinking not about a career as an artist or an engineer, but somewhere in between. Think about architecture." And it's funny that it was not a field that had ever occurred to me. I'd always talked about being an engineer, and when I discovered architecture, I realized, wow, that's really great. So I took some architecture courses while I was doing engineering, which was quite challenging actually. And I finished the engineering degree and then applied and did that 3-year master's degree I mentioned. So I studied for my Master of Architecture at University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. And that was a 3-year program, and I absolutely loved it. It was just a huge revelation because it was that perfect mix of technical and artistic, and I found that I was good at it. I found it kind of enlightened me in the way that I look at the world, not just at buildings, but almost everything. It was like you can think about the world in a different way as an architect because you're always looking for patterns and structures, and even the natural world has some things that architects discover in them, or at least I did, having been trained to kind of look for those sorts of things. So I would say it really changed my outlook on the world as much as the career that I wanted to pursue. So after I did that, I took a couple of years and worked, and then I applied for and was accepted to the PhD program at University of Pennsylvania. And so that was a 4-year endeavor. So it took me 4 years to finish that degree. And while I was finishing the degree, I was actually working as a faculty member at University of North Carolina at Charlotte. And then just after I finished the degree, I got the job out here at University of Washington. So really, since I graduated with the PhD, actually before I graduated with the PhD, I've been a teacher. And that's been nearly 25 years I've been teaching in architecture.
Damn. I want to talk about your classes, because when we spoke yesterday before our audio broke, you said that you teach sort of beginner's level and like expert level, like top level courses here at UW. Architectural history and theory, you talk about how architecture ties into culture and ideas and understanding. Tell me more about that.
Well, the one course that almost everybody at the university could take if they wanted to is called Appreciation of Architecture. That's Architecture 150. And I typically teach that in the fall. This past fall, it was remote, and there were just over 900 students in the class. I believe that is the biggest class on the entire campus. Because architecture appeals to lots of people, but almost no high school offers any education in architecture. That was kind of my situation. I didn't know anything about it. So what's great about this architecture appreciation class is that it's open to everybody. Everybody has some experience with architecture in their lives, but almost nobody has much expertise in it. So, you know, we start that the first part of it's a two-part course. The first part is based on ancient architecture. So we start right at the beginning and talk about, you know, why people build buildings the way they build them from the beginning. And what's interesting about that class is that you can look at ancient architecture and get insights into why humans are the way they are, right? I mean, we're unusual as a species in that we build these elaborate shelters for ourselves, even from the beginning. And then within those shelters, we have an artistic side. You know, you think about the cave paintings that people made 20,000 years ago. There's a need for artistic expression. So that's a piece of culture that comes into architecture. You think about how people gather around a fire or in a space and create music and dance. So there's another piece of artistic expression that comes into architecture. And then the expression of political power is something that architecture did. Think of the architecture of Rome and how the way buildings were built expressed the power of the emperors. So there is politics drawn into architecture. So almost anything you can think about that humans do or care about has some reflection in architecture, which is pretty amazing. So for me, these introductory classes, they're not basic classes. They're actually really important ideas that we can talk about in a context that people aren't used to. So, you know, it's not a rudimentary class, but it's an introductory class. And then as we get farther into, I teach an architecture theory class to juniors and a similar class to graduate students. And in both those classes, we're reading a lot more intensively. We're thinking about ideas mostly in the 20th century that have influenced architecture. So modernism was a big shift in architecture from traditional styles of architecture in the West and really in almost all parts of the world. Modernism was a break from that. And we focus on modernism, why it happened, what about the 20th century throughout the world influenced the way architecture was done, and how does that influence the way that we as architects think today? Like I said, both of those classes for the undergrads and grads are similar. And then at the PhD level, I also teach an architecture history theory course. Our PhD actually brings people in from landscape architecture, urban planning, real estate, construction management, and architecture all into the same room. So the challenge there is we've got lots of different disciplines coming together, and I'm trying to teach the big issues that bring all those disciplines together. So it's not just architecture, it's all those other things in the built environment, and trying to get everybody on common ground at the PhD level so that they can then go out and do research that's relevant to the whole field. So those are the history theory courses I teach. I teach other kinds of courses, which I can talk about if you like.
Awesome. I love talking to professors because you could ask a question like that and they just go off. You can really tell what a guest like loves what they do. I want to talk about just what I find controversial among students is actually like architectural opinions about campus itself. There's some buildings on campus that are gorgeous, that look amazing, and I've heard nothing but complaints about other ones. Do you have a favorite building on campus or any opinions about like what all that stuff looks like?
Yeah, I actually do have some favorites. I don't have a favorite, but I have some favorites. So, one building that I often cite as a favorite of mine, maybe partly because I spend so much time there, is Gould Hall. And I like to cite it as a favorite because it is kind of controversial. If you don't know Gould Hall, it's the concrete building on 15th Avenue across from the new Global Health building. And it's a pretty intimidating looking building from the outside. It's often characterized as a brutalist building. You've probably heard that term before.
I hear that so often. Yeah. What does that mean?
Well, brutalism was a trend in architecture that started in the 1950s in Europe and then moved to the United States a little bit later than that. And its name originated from the French word bru, or brut, which means raw. And brutalist buildings generally express their construction very clearly. So they're often made with concrete, but also they could be brick or steel or whatever. But all aspects of the building in a brutalist building tend to be shown. So you can see how the formwork worked on the concrete. And then you go into the building, you can see the ductwork and the piping and the sprinkler system for fire suppression. Nothing's really hidden in a brutalist building. And so that's why it's called Bru. That's why it's a raw building. It's not a brutal and unkind building. It's a building that is raw in the sense that a vegetable might be raw. It's fresh, right? So what I love about Gould Hall is that you can see it as this big monolith, but then as you get closer, you start to see the textures in the concrete, the form ties and the way the construction was done. There's a lot of subtlety in the surfaces that you wouldn't see unless you were looking for them. And then you step into Gould Hall, and if you've never been in Gould Hall, you gotta go, because you step in and there's this giant atrium that goes from the ground floor all the way up to the ceiling. And the light pours down, and there's classrooms visible, there's people all over the place, there's lots of noise and energy in the building. It houses all the departments in the built environment, and you can just see the collaborative space that interior courtyard generates. And then there's little touches in the architecture too. There's wooden handrails that you can lean against and look down on events in the space. There's bulletin boards all over the place. So it's an amazing home for a college of built environment. So I love it as a building, but I also love it as a home for my own disciplines. Other buildings that I really like on campus are the Conybeare Shell House, which is a really beautiful home for the rowing program. That was done by an architecture firm called Miller Hull. Actually, one of the faculty members in our department is one of the principals there. Just a great building, great use of materials. The arrangement of the space is really powerful. I like Packard Hall by LMN Architects. The way that it uses a material palette that blends with the campus, but it's entirely modern as a building. The way people can pass through the building as just a part of the passageway to get on campus, I like that. But also, you can stop and gather there. There's really quiet spaces for the courses. We often bring students to look at that because there's some really excellent design work. Both Miller Hall and LMN are Seattle firms that were at some point or another elected as the best firm in the country by the American Institute of Architects for a particular year. LMN also did the new train station down by Husky Stadium. Miller Hall did the new Global Health building that I mentioned a little bit ago. The police station near Gould Hall, the power station. So they're both firms that have done buildings on campus. Great, great buildings. And then one other building that I would say almost every architect on campus would mention is the UW Faculty Center. Used to be the UW Club. That was a building built, very modernist building, built in the 1950s. And people like it because it's a rare example in the Pacific Northwest of what would be characterized as almost a pure European modernism or international style building. It's that white building on Stevens Way next to Hull Health that looks out over the landscape. And if you ever go in there, the view is amazing of the entire Cascades through a big picture window.
That's awesome.
I think I named four buildings that are my favorites.
I miss campus, man. That's oh gosh. I want to talk about the department and the architecture department, and what can students sort of expect when they start out there?
So, like I mentioned, people can take architecture courses like ARC 150, Appreciation of Architecture, as freshmen. But if you're thinking about a degree in architecture, you really start as a sophomore because there's the competitive admissions at the end of sophomore year. And courses that you would take as a sophomore would be a drawing course, a series of drawing courses, a course about materials and making, which is about, you know, how architects think about putting materials together as part of a building. And that would give you a little bit of an opportunity to step into the workshops as part of architecture. One of the great things of about architecture school is that, unlike almost every other discipline, you're constantly working with your hands, right? You're building models. We have a furniture studio for undergraduates and graduates where students make a piece of furniture. Often these pieces of furniture win professional competitions. So, you know, it's not like you're hammering together some boards and making a chair. You're actually making a really professional piece of furniture. And that's the idea there is that people learn how to understand how materials work, how they behave. Like if you make a chair is subject to all kinds of really intense stresses. Like if you're leaning back on two legs on a chair, most joints aren't designed to deal with that. So as a designer of chair, you need to think about how the wood will react, how the joint will react, how the chair will be comfortable for the body. You know, there's all this thinking of through materials. So when you start out as a junior, you're taking design studio. So in studio, a typical studio is you'll be given an assignment to design a building. And lots of help along the way, but the end product is a building design, usually digital models, drawings, physical models. So you're working with your hands and your mind in the studio. And then other courses are things like theory courses, drawing courses, fabrication courses, courses about material and climate and how those affect buildings. So lots of different things come into it, but the core is the design studio. Students are especially in the design programs, are focusing on building design. We have a degree that is not design focused, it's more history theory focused for undergraduates. That's a smaller program. And even those students are, you know, they take a materials course and they're thinking about building design all the time. So, I would say the thing that characterizes architectural education is the studio and the opportunity to be making things as you're thinking through this process.
I really like that. I find a lot of guests on the show and just a lot of professors I know in general, they didn't even major in the subject that they teach. There's some sort of transitional event that sort of happens often. I want to talk about sort of transferable skills you learn in architecture. You already talked about design. There's a really great artistic aspect, engineering. How do all those come together, and how can those help you get other jobs maybe?
That's a really great question. One of the things that kind of led me to study for a PhD was when I graduated in 1990 with a Master of Architecture degree, we just happened to be at a deep trough in architectural employment. And that happens sometimes. Architecture is somewhat cyclical. You can see that even in Seattle, we've been in a big building boom for a while, but those booms end. And so, you know, occasionally it may be necessary to do other things. And so I happen to graduate at a pretty bad time for architects. But I was with a group of really talented people and we all found other things to do. So I worked for a while in a steel fabrication shop. I actually got a job, working in a fine metalworking shop in Philadelphia. They make things like gates for high-end houses or metal chandeliers or railings, a lot of hand-built stuff. So that kind of craft work that you learn in the studio is really transferable into other contexts. So there's that side of things. I have a former student, actually, who started a furniture making business in Manhattan. She was one of our best architecture students, but she loved the small scale stuff. And so she moved to Manhattan, started a furniture making studio, and then started teaching at Parsons School of Design as a furniture, kind of a small scale product design professor. You know, other colleagues of mine, because I was at Penn, it was a pretty academic program. A lot of us actually ended up teaching. And that's a route certainly people could go, and that's the route I went, a more academic direction. So teaching and writing is what I tend to do, and a lot of my colleagues tend to do. But we think of architecture as a field that gives you lots of communication skill, because architects have to talk with clients, they have to talk with contractors. They have to draw and kind of advertise their services. Communication is a really important part of architecture, and the skills that we develop in architecture school do lead to things like advertising or, you know, other kinds of fields where communication, both verbally and visually, is really important.
That's really interesting. You talk about your experience and your the field sort of when you left school and how that can be good or bad. 2021, it's a new decade. What can students who graduate now with a master's expect in a city like Seattle?
Well, Seattle is a fortunate place for people to do an architecture degree. If you think about the University of Washington's architecture program is one of two significant architecture programs in the state. There's also one at WSU. And then there's one in Oregon, and then there are some in California. Compare that to, say, Philadelphia or New York, where there's maybe 10 places you could do an architecture degree in a small area. The fact that we have one program here in Seattle means that there's lots of opportunity for students to come out and work at firms. Architecture, Seattle is a great city for architecture firms. We have a lot of good firms, like I mentioned, Miller Hall and LMN, both national award winners. There are other firms similarly at that high level in Seattle. So I would say almost all of our graduates, even in a downturn, we're not in a great position right now for architecture because of the pandemic and a slight downturn in the economy. We expect it to go back up a bit, but people are getting jobs in firms. So in our program, it's kind of rare for people to have my experience where they would graduate and then there wouldn't be any jobs. There's almost always employment in Seattle for architects, just because we've been in a growth phase for, I don't know, 20 years or so. So I would say you would expect as an architecture student at University of Washington to come out and work in an architecture firm. That would be the standard thing.
That's excellent. That's good to hear too, given the name of the show. So one more question before we go, just a personal question for you. You talked about your favorite buildings on campus, the design aspects of those. Do you have a favorite building in general?
That's a tough one, but I would say, one of my favorite architects was an American architect named Louis Kahn, whose work actually is sometimes characterized as brutalist, but it's often also characterized as some of the best detailed architecture out there. One of his great buildings is called the Salk Institute in La Jolla, California, and it's a lab for research, but there's this courtyard with a thin line of fountain water that goes down and then drops off the end of it. And beyond that, it opens to the horizon of the ocean. And it's one of the most stunning kind of ethereal spaces I've ever been in. It's absolutely amazing. It's so worth a visit because it's, you know, you think of a laboratory building as a kind of almost an industrial building, But this is nothing like that. There's something almost sculptural about the building, and the way that it integrates with the environment and the horizon is super powerful. But then when you start to look at the details, the concrete work is exquisite. And then there's these inserts into the concrete frame with these teak panels, which have windows. And those are just beautifully inserted into the building. Every aspect of the building, from the big scale to the small scale, has been just lovingly designed and put together. And it's just kind of the pinnacle of what architecture can achieve, in my view.
I like hearing that. I think that's going to do it for us today. Alex Anderson is a professor at the University of Washington. Look for his classes this fall over Zoom, I'm guessing. I'm not sure if we've decided on that yet.
Maybe we're live. Some of them will be live, I think, in the fall. We hope. Fingers crossed.
Excellent. All right, so you can hear from him there. Until next time, Alex, thank you so much.
Thanks, Luke.
Folks, that does it for another episode. Thank you so much for listening to How Do I Get Your Job? Before I go, I'd like to urge you to listen to other shows on the UW Soundbite Network. Shows like Dig Deeper, The Box Seat, Let's Talk About Sex, Quarantine, they're all great. Please support student journalists. Please give us a click just to listen. Anything helps. I'd also like to give a shout out to Grace Sturlaugson for the new art for How Do I Get Your Job? It looks very nice. You can look at Grace's work at @craftedgrace on Instagram. That's @craftedgrace, one word. So until next time, my name is Luke Schaefer, and I sincerely hope you have a great day.